Tonight on Dateline, a devoted dad of six, the target in a twisted plot to kill. Who would want him dead?
You get a knock at your door that would change your life.
Yeah, it was a pretty dark time. This was real.
She was shocked. The last thing that you expect to hear is a police officer telling you that somebody's trying to kill your husband.
It's a murder for hire. It's very serious.
He offered me the $50,000. I was not going to let this happen.
You were an undercover officer?
The undercover hitman. I had to totally change how I acted, talked, everything.
You're sure you want this done?
I'm positive. I am positive I want it.
One mistake could blow this whole operation.
Absolutely.
The seconds are ticking away.
It was all or nothing.
This isn't a hardened criminal. This is a soccer mob.
I mean, it was hell. It was hell.
Here's Andrea Canning with The Eastlake Conspiracy.
Along the shores of majestic Lake Erie, not far from Cleveland, lies a little-known city named Eastlake, Ohio.
It's more of a suburb. You got nice properties with decent-sized yards.
And gorgeous waterfront views. It's the kind of place folks settle to raise a family. Quiet and safe.
You never hear about murders or stuff like that.
But that wholesome image was about to be shattered.
Basically, the gist of it was he wants this guy dead.
Someone had murder on their mind, and a deadly plot was brewing.
It's one of the things that you see on TV. You have to be evil to want to murder somebody else.
It would all come crashing down on one family.
I mean, it was hell. It was hell.
But would those responsible slip through detectives' fingers?
Your hands in the air! Put your hands in the air, you fuck dead!
It all began Memorial Day weekend, 2011.
Eastlake Police, Stephanie.
It was a Friday evening when an unusual 911 call came into dispatch.
I was approached at the Captain's Club to murder somebody for $50,000. So I need somebody out here.
A murder for hire in Eastlake? It was hard to believe.
Okay, and what is your name?
Patrick Sabo.
The dispatcher recognized the caller's name. Patrick Sabo had lived in Eastlake for years, was a former Army Ranger, and was known to everyone at the station, including the chief of police, Larry Reich.
How did you know the caller?
He's been involved in a couple of minor incidents in our city. He was never a big problem. He's just somebody that we had dealt with in the past, and we knew him by face.
So police were surprised about the reason Pat was calling. He wanted to report that someone was planning a murder.
And who approached you, do you know?
It's the father of one of my high school friends.
How bizarre is that for your police department to get a call like that?
It's extremely bizarre. We're pretty surprised by it.
This is the land of soccer moms and children and families, and not something that you would expect.
Correct. We don't deal with stuff like that on a normal basis.
Did you believe it? Did you think that this was possible?
Well, we definitely knew it was worth looking into.
Police knew Pat well enough to know he wasn't lying. So the dispatcher wanted to know more about this man offering Pat money to kill someone.
What's his name, Patrick?
I'm not sure of his first name, but the last name is Zombori.
Zombori? Whoever he was, perhaps his desire to have someone killed was just a moment of anger or a crude joke taken wrong. But investigators needed to be sure.
We definitely didn't want to ignore it and, God forbid, let something bad happen.
That's no joke when you hear something like that on 911.
No, it's not.
Detective Christopher Bowersock, now retired, was assigned the case, and he sprung into action. Police called Pat Sabo to come down to the station.
And I interviewed him.
All right, today's date is May 27th, 2011.
Bowersock recorded the audio.
All right, why don't you just tell me from the beginning how this all transpired.
The detective wasn't sure what to expect, but it didn't take long to see that Patrick believed Zombori was serious about his offer.
He
flat out offered me money to kill him.
Kill who? Pat said he was given few details about the target.
The subject that he once killed lives in Atlanta, Georgia.
And his name is what?
I don't know his name.
No name, but he said Zombori did give him the target's photo and home address.
Is he willing to pay for your travel expenses?
He's paying for all expenses paid.
Did you have any fears about telling the police?
No. I fear no man on this earth. No woman, no creature.
Was this a believable story he was telling you?
Well, anybody is going to have a little bit of skepticism when you hear something like this.
After all, Pat was a colorful character.
Pretty hungry for money.
But if detectives had any doubts about Pat's story, they didn't last long.
As soon as I handed him the picture and the address, I said, this is how serious they are. The cop went, okay, now that changes things.
To investigators, Pat's story was so detailed, it seemed clear this was no hoax. So they had to move fast. A man's life could be in danger.
If we delay our own investigation and it would be carried out by a third or fourth party, then it would just be tragic.
You wanted to take control of the situation.
Absolutely.
And that meant finding the target before it was too late.
Coming up, the first piece of the puzzle falls into place.
We found out that he was a prominent businessman.
Target identified, a devoted husband and dedicated dad of six.
Just completely selfless.
Why would anyone want him dead?
Just spite, hate, venom, vitriol.
Eastlake police had reason to believe a man's life was at risk, but they needed more evidence to be sure.
It's a murder for hire. It's very serious.
Serious and also a puzzle. Investigators were missing key pieces about the target.
I was never given his name or anything. He gave me a picture and his address.
Detectives ran a background check, and they learned the person who lived at that address was named David Metter. David was the target.
We found out that he was a prominent businessman.
A businessman who lived nearly 1,000 miles away in Gwinnett County, Georgia. From what detectives could tell, David seemed to have it all. A good job, a nice house, and a happy marriage with a new wife.
It was a small wedding, intimate wedding.
Lonnie and David Metter had been married less than a year, but Lonnie already felt like she'd met her soulmate.
And we had to... They have a really, really nice connection.
It was a second marriage for both Lonnie and David, and they each had kids. David, 4 girls. Lonnie, a son and daughter.
We are both in the 6 children club. Not always easy, but a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was super fun. I loved having kids.
Lonnie described her life with David as wonderful, but says she never could have imagined the challenges they'd face together as a couple.
How did you meet David?
We met at a work function.
They both worked in the automotive industry and were attending a conference in Las Vegas when a mutual friend suggested they meet.
There was an instant connect that was a bit shocking, I'll tell you. I had been on my own for just about 2 years and was pretty well settled in that.
You knew early on that David could be the one.
Yes, I knew early on.
Not to mention that I'm sure you must have found him handsome.
Oh, super handsome. Wasn't sure if I could talk about that. Yes, very much so. Great smile, great eyes, but just an instant, like instant soulmate.
But once the conference ended, reality quickly set in.
You look at a map and you go, oh, you live in Baltimore and I live in Atlanta. You know, how does that work?
David was also separated, going through a messy divorce, and figuring out a custody arrangement for his girls, who still lived with his ex.
You had been through a divorce yourself?
I had.
Did that help in giving him, David, advice about how to navigate these waters?
I think so. Early on in the friendship, I can remember encouraging him to try again, to do everything they could to fight for the marriage.
But Lonnie says David assured her there was no hope for a reconciliation. So the next time he was in Atlanta for business, they went on their first date.
We went to my church.
Wow, that's a very wholesome first date.
Yeah, I knew that if that wasn't a connect, then it would be very difficult for us.
It was a match made in heaven. A year and a half later, David and Lonnie got engaged.
My ring was very special. He and the kids all went to pick it out. There's six baguette diamonds around the center of it to represent each of the kids, because this was not just a marriage for us, it was a marriage of our families.
After they married, David and Lonnie moved in together in Georgia. David won custody of his oldest daughter, but his three other girls continued to live out of state with their mom.
Visitation in general was difficult from day one.
Things weren't easy with David's ex, but Lonnie says David flew to Ohio to see his daughters whenever he could.
He still went for every school event, every weekend that he could get time with them.
Did that make you fall in love with him more, his dedication to his children?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just completely selfless. And he was going to do whatever it took to make sure that they were okay and that they were taken care of and supported and loved. Absolutely.
Great father, loving husband, successful businessman. It all seemed ideal. So why did David have a price on his head? That was a question the police were asking, and Patrick Szabo had the answers. He was about to tell detectives the rest of the story, including why the man named Zombori wanted David dead.
Just spite, hate, venom, vitriol coming out of him.
Coming up.
He didn't care how I did it. He didn't care what it was going to cost.
Who was this mysterious man named Zombori? And who else was in on this murderous plot?
I mean, this isn't a thug. This isn't a hardened criminal. This is a soccer mom.
Yeah, she just wanted him dead.
When Dateline continues.
Pat Szabo was in shock. He'd been asked to do the unthinkable and was still trying to wrap his head around it.
I was like, I cannot believe this is going down.
A man named Zombori had offered Pat $50,000 to fly to Georgia and kill David Metter. But Pat Szabo was no hitman.
I could not let anything happen to this man. They were serious. No, it wasn't going down like that.
He says that's why he called the police.
If I said nothing and did nothing and saw tomorrow David on the TV dead because I didn't do anything, that would be just as bad as me pulling the trigger.
Pat wanted to save David Metter, not hurt him. And as he continued his interview with detectives, it was clear there was much more to his story, especially when it came to Zombori.
I'd never met this man. There was no reason for me to meet this man.
Nevertheless, Pat told detectives he'd agreed to the meeting as a favor to an old high school classmate named Chrissy. Al Zombori was her dad, a 76-year-old widower. In fact, Zombori lived with his daughter and her children.
How good of friends were you with Chrissy?
Not very. We didn't run in the same groups.
So it was no surprise when they lost touch after graduation. Pat joined the army and became a ranger, while Chrissy went to college, got married, and had children.
She was fun. She had a contagious laugh. She was just somebody that I wanted to be around.
Karen Snyder was one of Chrissy's closest friends. For years, they lived on the same quaint cul-de-sac and raised their kids together.
How was Chrissy as a mom?
She was awesome.
And she was also a compassionate friend. Karen says Chrissy was a shoulder to cry on when her marriage fell apart.
I would call her crying, she would come over, and she was just my rock through the whole thing.
Chrissy, now a divorced mom of four girls, needed a rock of her own. So she reached out to Pat on Facebook. It had been 20 years since they'd last seen each other. The Chrissy he talked to online seemed to be unraveling.
It would always turn into a poor me pity party.
Pat says she spent most of their chats venting about her ex.
Every conversation would end up with her complaining about how much her ex abused her, mentally, physically.
Pat told detectives he didn't know much about the ex, but he did know Chrissy's married name. Christine Zombori Metter. Turns out, David Metter was her ex-husband.
My advice to her was always move on. but she never wanted to listen.
Pat says Chrissy's continuing bitterness started to grate on his nerves.
My ex-husband this, my ex-husband that. He's this, he's that, blah, 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 blah. Just in a joking manner. So, you know, save your money, hire a hitman.
You obviously have a unique sense of humor.
A little bit.
Pat assumed Chrissy got the joke. But hours later, she talked to Pat on Skype. This time, she asked him to meet her father for lunch. And when Zombori picked up Pat for the meeting...
Before we even get out of the parking lot, he looks me dead in the eye. And he says, if I could shoot straight, I'd have killed the son of a bitch myself already.
And so why do you go forward?
If there was any serious thought given to it because of what I said, well, I gotta know.
Pat told police his worst fears were confirmed at the restaurant when Zombori offered him money to kill David.
He was nothing but spite, hate, venom, vitriol coming out of him. He wanted him dead. He didn't care how I did it. He didn't care what it was going to cost.
Did he bring up how you would be paid and how much?
Yeah. He offered me the $50,000 to do this, and he offered it from the life insurance settlement that's payable to Chrissy upon his death.
Did he say why you were the chosen one?
They knew I was hurting for money.
Did Chrissy know you were a former Army Ranger?
Yeah, I was pretty proud of getting into the Rangers battalion that most people knew.
An Army Ranger is trained to kill. Do you think that Chrissy looked at your background and thought, maybe this is the right guy?
She knew I had the capabilities to do it. Her biggest mistake was thinking I would.
I mean, this isn't a thug. This isn't a hardened criminal. This is a soccer mom.
Yeah, this is somebody who goes about their day like everybody else. She just wanted him dead.
But the only proof police had was Pat's word. And that wasn't enough to arrest Chrissy or her dad.
We didn't have enough evidence to go forward.
So investigators came up with a clever plot to catch Chrissy and her dad conspiring to kill David. And they'd have to act fast. The father and daughter wanted David killed right away.
What we want to do is get a conversation on tape. That's the most important thing.
But that could be difficult, because Chrissy's dad wasn't just some guy angry with his ex-son-in-law. He'd spent 26 years in law enforcement. He was a policeman.
Must have been surprising to you to learn that he was a former police officer.
Surprising is a good word, but a little bit worried because he could see through what other people couldn't see through. So we had to really be careful in how we handled the investigation.
One mistake and the entire case could be ruined. Or worse, someone could get hurt. Would detectives be able to pull this off?
Coming up, a change in the script. A new hitman enters the scene.
This guy, he's done this before.
Who was the hitman going to be, the new hitman?
That would be me. I had to totally change how I acted, talked, everything.
Eastlake detectives needed to catch Chrissy Metter and her dad on tape, planning the murder of her ex. And they knew the only person who could record that conversation was Pat Sabo.
How important was Patrick Sabo to your plan?
Patrick was instrumental.
Was there a risk putting him in the middle of this?
Absolutely. There's always a risk.
But Pat made it clear to investigators it was a risk he was willing to take.
I've jumped out of planes. What's the difference? You know, you hop in your car, you got a danger of dying. At least this way, if I go during this, I went doing something pretty darn interesting.
No longer just a concerned citizen calling 911, Pat was now a police informant. And his mission was clear. With a recording device in hand, keep Chrissy and her dad talking about the murder plot.
You need to record every word that is spoken.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're doing this on your own.
Yeah. And then I just call them when I have a recording and they come pick it up.
But before Patrick did anything, detectives needed to be sure David Metter was safe. So they asked police in Georgia to check on him.
We had been contacted by the Eastlake Police Department and they'd notified us that they were midway through an investigation.
Major Stephen Shaw of the Gwinnett County Police Department sent officers to the house to observe from a distance. David was alive and well. But investigators didn't want him to know there was a threat against his life. Not yet, anyway. They had more work to do.
And they were concerned that notification to the Metter family would have at some point got back to Christy Metter, and the case would have been concluded prematurely.
So they didn't say a word and kept an eye on David.
It was very important for us to get the information and at the right time make contact with him.
Before they launched their sting, detectives felt there was still one thing they had to do: replace Pat Sabo as the hitman. Police wanted one of their own on the inside, working undercover.
And who was the hitman going to be? The new hitman?
Me. That would be me.
So, detective and playing the role of hitman?
Yes.
Detective Bowersock would play the role of Vincent, a hitman with mob affiliations.
It's like a movie script.
It is a movie script. Everything has to be laid out. You know, you have to know what you're going to say before you say it.
One mistake could blow this whole operation.
Absolutely. Something said wrong, an action done wrong, anything that makes you look like a policeman. I had to totally change everything and how I acted, talked, all my mannerisms, everything.
It was now up to Pat to convince Chrissy and her dad to outsource this murder to a professional hitman. Armed with a recording device, Pat says he Skyped Chrissy and told her all about Vincent and his fee.
So it really implicated her.
But when he handed the recording over to Detective Bowersock, there was a problem.
I forgot to hit record.
Oops.
It was a disappointing setback, but Pat rallied and called again the very next day.
Chrissy.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm at the airport. What's up?
Okay. Remember that guy I told you about?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I talked to him, so it's no longer a hypothetical situation. It's a real situation.
Okay.
Chrissy seemed unfazed by the idea of a new hitman. And when Pat mentioned Vince wanted to meet her elderly dad, that seemed fine, too.
All right, so Dad's still going to call me tonight at, like, or he's going to Skype me?
Yeah, it'll have to be him Skyping you.
Okay, we'll Skype later, and I'll talk to him, and we'll set something up to meet me and Vince.
Okay.
Later that night, Pat spoke with Chrissy's dad and played up all the reasons Vince was the perfect choice to carry out the plan.
This guy, Vince, he's done this before, Al. Okay, he's spent time in prison in California. He's, put it this way, this dude scares the piss out of me. I told Chrissy, you know, this guy wants to meet tomorrow. Okay?
Okay.
And just like that, Vince was in. They discussed his retainer.
Like I told Chrissy, he wants to up it from $2,000 down to $3,000 now. Is that going to be a problem?
A little bit.
Well, how much could you get tomorrow?
Tomorrow? I probably could get $3,000 tomorrow if I had to.
So far, everything was going according to plan. Detective Bowersock was about to meet Chrissy's dad face to face as Vince, the hitman. Everything had to be realistic, even Bowersock's appearance.
You look very nice and clean cut right now. How did you look?
I was in, you know, a Harley Davidson t-shirt, pair of jeans.
You look the part of a hitman.
Yeah, I think I was pretty convincing on my look.
Bowersock needed to convince Chrissy's dad, enough for Zombori to implicate himself on tape. The pressure was on.
All right. So what's going on here?
Coming up.
Are you sure you want this done? This is the father of your grandchildren, you understand?
Family, I understand. Fully.
Okay.
You've got the money. God bless. Have fun.
He's saying have fun?
Basically, yeah. He just wanted to have me do it.
When Dateline continues.
Detective Chris Bowersock had set the stage for his undercover operation. He was about to meet Chrissy's dad for the first time, posing as Vince, the hitman. And he needed two things to happen.
The first element was to meet with Al Zombori to make the hire for the hit. The second one was the transfer of money to me to solidify the deal.
The meeting was in Detective Bowersock's car, which was wired and parked in an empty lot.
So I'm meeting with suspect Al Zambori on a murder for hire.
Pat Szabo arrived with Zambori to make the introduction, then stepped away to let the two men talk alone.
All right.
So what's going on here? He gives me a picture of some guy named David Meter.
He divorced my daughter, and he is pulling some real on her. Okay? He took one kid.
Okay.
He's threatening to take the rest of them.
Zombori's only focus was finalizing the contract on David Metter's life.
I got $3,000 here.
Are you sure you want this done?
Why
don't you give it to me? This is a father of your grandchildren.
Yes.
Yeah, but this is a father of your grandchildren. You understand? Family
I understand. Fully. More so than you think.
What made you think of killing this guy?
What made me?
Yeah.
Why not? It's the only answer I have. He's such a scumbag.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's it.
You got the money. God bless. Have fun.
The father of his grandchildren, and he's saying have fun?
Basically, yeah. He just wanted to have me do it.
Why not arrest him right then and there?
The case wasn't as solid as I wanted it. I wanted Chrissy, because Chrissy's the one that set this up.
You believe Chrissy was the mastermind?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind.
But the time to prove it was running out. Chrissy and her dad wanted David killed in the next few days. Both had agreed to meet with Vince once it was done.
They had to establish proof that Mr. Metter had been killed and that contract had been completed.
Detectives knew there was only one person who could make that happen. David Metter himself. Eastlake Police sent Major Shaw of Gwinnett County to the Metter home to finally break the news that there was a price on David's head. But there was a problem.
I said, I'm sorry, he's out of town. He's gone to Florida for business.
At that point, we were forced to loop her in as to what was going on in order for her to make contact with David for us.
Lonnie called David immediately and told him the horrifying story. And it was horrifying. Just ask David.
Why would my ex-wife ever do this? I know that she hates me, but I can't imagine being hated so much that something like this could be real.
David's 17-year marriage to Chrissy flashed before his eyes. A once happy household that had turned so bitter.
Where we started to falter was when my career started really taking shape and I had opportunities to leave Ohio.
Chrissy hated living far from her parents, and the marriage eventually fell apart. David says they separated, and that's when things turned ugly.
I immediately became a wife beater, a child beater, and pretty much anything else that Chrissy could accuse me of.
David says her accusations against him are completely untrue. According to David, Chrissy was the one who tormented him. He recalls a phone call from her at the height of their divorce and custody battle. It's a call that still haunts him to this day.
I was living in this apartment building that was up on the 10th floor. I remember the words that came out of her mouth during this conversation. We don't miss you. The girls don't need you. And you're worth more to us dead than you are alive. You should just jump.
Wow.
I fell to my knees. I remember praying and hoping for something to change.
David remarried. By then, Chrissy had moved back to Ohio with the kids. But David says the problems with his ex got worse, especially between Chrissy and their daughters. So he and Lonnie decided to fight for primary custody.
I told her that there was a high likelihood that I was going to get the girls.
Now, David was left to wonder, was this murder for hire some sort of custody revenge? With the clock ticking, there was no time to process it all. Major Shaw needed David to do something crazy, stage his own death.
The detective gets on the phone, and his words were, I need you to take pictures of yourself.
Pictures the police planned to Photoshop to make it look like David had been shot in the head.
He wants you to pretend that you're dead.
Right. I'm thinking to myself, I can't make these believable. How do I act dead? I'm not sure what I would look like dead.
We needed to expose certain parts of his head in order to place the gunshot wound on it.
David needed to hurry. Chrissy and her dad were supposed to meet the hitman, Vince, in a few hours. So David snapped some photos in his hotel room on his phone and sent them to Major Shaw. It was then up to his CSI tech to make the images believable.
We have a crime intelligence analyst that was fairly proficient at Photoshop.
The tech added a fake gunshot wound and blood spatter to the pictures, but they were far from perfect. It was a rush job after all. Major Shaw sent them off to Eastlake Police.
Were they happy with it?
I don't really know if they had a choice. They were scheduled to meet.
Back in Ohio, adrenaline was high as detectives prepared for their final undercover sting.
This was high stakes. This had to work.
Yes, this had to work.
But Bowersock says Chrissy suddenly got cold feet. She told Pat she wanted to back out of the meeting.
There's a huge problem. My job is to make sure she's there. Now she doesn't want to be there.
What kind of guidance do you give him to get things back on track, to get Chrissy there?
To make her believe that, one, she hired somebody to kill somebody who just did. And this killer is telling her she better show up.
I put the fear of Jesus in her. Well, I put the fear of Vinny in her. And she's like, yeah, you're right.
The plan was back on track. Unmarked cars were stationed near the parking lot.
I'm already posted in the end of the drive.
Ready to swoop in if needed.
And it's all coming down to this moment.
One moment. I was holding my breath in the car.
Would Chrissy show, or would she slip through detectives' fingers?
Coming up.
Does it look like an accident?
The big photo finish. Would this picture convince anyone?
Do you worry that he's going to look at this and say, uh-uh?
Well, yeah, he's seen crime scenes before.
Just let me see it.
It was the moment of truth for Eastlake detectives, the final undercover meeting with Chrissy Metter and Al Zombori. Detectives had plenty of evidence on Chrissy's dad, but in order to get Chrissy, they needed her to show up too.
I was holding my breath in the car when they were showing up and making sure that I could see three heads in the car.
Father and daughter had already been told David was dead, and they arrived at the parking lot with Pat to see the proof, that doctored photo of David.
As we pull in, I say, well, I'm going to go over there. You guys do what you got to do.
Chrissy and her dad got into Bowersock's car. It was the first time the detective was meeting her.
How are you guys doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Police needed Chrissy to admit that she was the one who would pay the rest of the hitman's fee. So right off the bat, Bowersock asked her about the life insurance policy she had on David.
How much is the policy for?
$1.5 million.
$1.5 million?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of curious. What, especially for you, this is your father. This is the father of your kids. I went over this with your dad.
He beat me. He beat my kids.
Okay.
Stolen everything from him.
Just let me see it.
Al Zombori wanted to see the photo, the proof that David Metter was dead.
Do you worry that he's going to look at this and say, uh-uh?
Well, yeah, he's seen crime scenes before, so I did it as quick as I possibly could.
Okay.
The photo worked. Zombori believed his former son-in-law was dead. He didn't want his daughter to look at the picture. Chrissy was interested in the details of the murder.
Does it look like an accident?
No.
No.
I mean, does it look like he was mugged?
No, don't even bring it out.
Don't.
You don't want to see it.
Oh, I shot him in the head like you guys wanted me to do.
Okay.
He's done.
He's done. And with those two words, the sting was over and the cavalry rushed in.
Put your hands in the air! Put your hands in the air! You're both dead!
What did you guys do?
We did nothing.
Did you set me up?
No.
Chrissy and her dad were handcuffed and taken to the station. And when they sat down with investigators, Al Zombori started talking.
You're here for conspiracy to commit aggravated murder.
Who?
What do you mean who?
You're saying you got everything figured out. Who?
How about your ex-son-in-law? How does that sound?
Well, he should be murdered.
The interview quickly ended after Zombori asked for a lawyer. And when it was Chrissy's turn, she acted oblivious to it all.
Do you understand the charge against you?
So I'm being charged?
With conspiracy to commit aggravated murder. Very serious charge, felony first degree.
I understand. Is David alive?
I'm not privileged to tell you anything.
But 7 months later, when it came time for Chrissy's trial, her defense strategy was simple. Chrissy blamed her father. Judge Eugene Lucci presided over the trial.
The defense tried to show that this was all Al Zombori's doing. He snooped in Christine Metter's unsecured laptop.
The defense said Zombori saw that Facebook conversation between Chrissy and Pat, the one where Pat joked about hiring a hitman. They said it was Zombori who wanted to arrange the meeting with Pat.
Christine said she didn't know the purpose of the meeting, and all she was doing was her father's bidding.
Chrissy took the stand to tell the jurors exactly that, and that she never wanted to meet the hitman, but was pressured by Pat Szabo.
It was him telling me to do something that I did not want to do. He was getting forceful with it, telling me Vince knew where I lived.
If Chrissy sounded guilty in that undercover recording, she said she was playing along out of fear of what Vince might do.
I started getting scared that this man was going to show up at my door, that this man will kill, that this man will hurt my children.
Did you want David Metter killed?
Never.
But prosecutors said Chrissy knew exactly what she was doing. They said the proof was in that undercover recording from the final sting.
Does it look like an accident?
No, I don't know.
What is, can you tell her? I shot him in the head like you wanted me to. What does this woman say? Okay.
The state closed with this. Killing David was a win-win for Chrissy. She would get the proceeds of his insurance policy and something else. Custody. She'd get to keep her four girls.
Were you concerned that there was a chance that Chrissy would be found not guilty?
We were still both very anxious.
After weeks of testimony, the jury started deliberations. And in just a few hours, the verdict was in.
We, the jury, find the defendant guilty.
Guilty of two counts of conspiracy to commit aggravated murder.
What is that moment like for you after everything that you've been through?
It was vindication.
Relief. She scared us. And she wasn't going to be able to do that for a long time.
Nor was Al Zombori. He took a plea deal and died in prison after serving 5 years. Chrissy declined our request for an interview. But in a statement that unexpectedly read like a confession, she wrote in part, "I was very wrong in my actions and I'm paying dearly. Anyone who has been through a divorce that never ends can understand I was at the end of my rope." Chrissy was sentenced to 10 years. Her approaching release date seemed to weigh on David and Lonnie.
My hope is the prison system has done its job and she'll try to be reacclimated into a normal life.
Lonnie, you're getting upset just talking about it.
Yeah. I don't think that she's learned anything from this experience.
Chrissy was released from prison in 2021, but Lonnie and David aren't dwelling on this chapter of their past. They know the challenges they've faced are unusual, but they use their story to counsel other couples facing obstacles. And they say they are stronger today as a couple and a family.
When you talk with each one of the girls, their mother is Lonnie.
After the trial, David had Chrissy's parental rights terminated.
Lonnie, you go on to adopt these girls and welcome them into your heart with open arms.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always actually wanted a lot of kids, and here I get to have four more.
David and Lonnie say this chapter of their lives may not have been possible without Pat.
I think the best way that I can show thanks to Patrick is to show how our family has risen far above this from a moment in time that he had control of.
I've seen the beauty of these two people, especially Lonnie. She adopted those girls. Good people. Does my heart good to see that. Know I did the right thing.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.